It's time for another episode of the Journey to Diagnosis series, Stories and Struggles from Autoimmune Encephalitis Patients. On this episode, HESA Executive Director Susan Foley interviews Regina Poo, who has a form of autoimmune encephalitis called Hashimoto's encephalopathy.
My name is Susan Foley, co-founder and executive director of HESA, a nonprofit that was formed to create awareness, research, and support of people with Hashimoto's encephalopathy and seronegative forms of autoimmune encephalitis. Today, we'll be interviewing Regina. She is a volunteer for HESA and has a diagnosis of HE. Good afternoon, Regina. I'm so happy that you were willing to sit down and talk to me today.
Well, afternoon to you too, Susan. I'm glad that I could be of help to you.
Oh, that's so nice. You're such a big help to HESA as it is. So this just adds one more star to the board.
all the gold stars that we can get, huh?
Yeah, all the stars you can get. Can you tell me a little bit about your autoimmune encephalopathy journey? Let's ask, how old were you when you first started getting sick?
You know, it's kind of hard to say for me, because I can remember over the course of my life that I've had several bouts that have been similar to this, but I've been able to overcome it on my own, basically by resting up until the last bout. And then the last bout, I can't remember. Gee, where have you heard that before? I was trying to think about it, and I honestly can't remember if I started having symptoms in 2017 or 2018.
Well, that's pretty normal, because sometimes it used to be said that the symptoms come on suddenly, but I believe in my heart, with the autoimmune type of encephalitis, that you can probably have smaller symptoms way before you actually get the severe ones and you get diagnosed. Because I'm like you, I can go back in my head and start thinking back, and where doctors would say, oh, it's stress related, you're a working mom, and that causes these symptoms, and, you know, kind of brushing me off. So I understand what you're saying.
Well, I don't know that I ever went to a doctor for it, because I know, as you said, stress. It seems that almost every time that I was sick, it came after an incredibly stressful time in my life. Like, for instance, when I was taking care of my mom and then she died, I don't know if it was my body decompressing or if I was sick, but I was so extremely fatigued, I could not get out of bed. And I've had similar incidences, you know, 4, 5, 6. I can't even count how many times throughout my life where it hit the same way.
And how would you know, considering the fact that stress can trigger relapses for somebody with autoimmune encephalitis? So it's a dozen of one and a dozen of another.
Right. Right. You don't know.
No. And the doctors don't know.
Right.
It's hard for them to tell. So can I ask how old you were when you were diagnosed, Regina?
It's 2000. I was 57.
Okay. That's about the age I was when I started getting sick. I mean, really sick, where they...
Right.
Something was wrong. That's right. Interesting.
2 years prior to that, my primary doctor and I had been hunting down symptoms, and it just seemed that nothing that we did worked, and it never got us to the bottom of the story and what was causing everything.
Yeah, I started with my primary too, with all these crazy symptoms. And I know you know my story. I've got several autoimmune diseases besides HE. So it was
it hard. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't blame them for not being able to figure it out. How long did it take to actually get that diagnosis, the correct diagnosis?
Well, I feel fortunate in the fact that my doctor, my primary doctor, listened to me. Like I said, we had been on the journey for 2 years, and I told him that I was done with trying this and trying that and nothing working and not really getting any answers. And when I had that discussion with him, then he decided to send me out to specialists. And I only went to 3 specialists before I got my diagnosis. But, you know, you can't get into a specialist right away.
No.
But again, I was blessed because I think that my wait time was no more than 3 months for each one.
Yeah, that's unusual, actually. You know, I just made an appointment with a specialist in Madison, and I can't get in until November.
Right.
June. So that makes it really hard when you have a rare disease and you have to find somebody that would know how to treat you.
Yeah.
Difficult. What do you feel pointed them to the correct diagnosis?
Well, you know, it's a diagnosis of exclusion.
Right.
And I went to 2 specialists that got minor diagnosis for me. And in the meantime, I was waiting on a neurologist. And when I went to the neurologist, he basically diagnosed me prior to doing any testing. But he said, we have to do the testing so that we can exclude everything else.
Good for him. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And to my surprise, I had no idea what that meant. When I left that appointment, he told me to go right down to the lab. And I had a panic attack when I saw the tech coming out of the office with a string of labels that was so long, they were literally dragging on the floor. That day I donated 39 vials of blood.
Checking everything.
Yes, he was extremely thorough. Although it was stunning to me, I was grateful that he was willing to do all of that to make sure that he had the accurate diagnosis.
Yeah, I have to give him a lot of credit because that's not always the way it is. Let's just put it that way. I mean, I think you were fortunate. You were.
Yes. But that wasn't all of it. That was just the beginning. You know, of course, the follow-up, you have to have the brain MRI. And we all know that 9 times out of 10, the brain MRI comes back normal.
Exactly. Yes.
But we have to go through those steps. And then the final thing was the lumbar puncture. And because of my spine, it was not an easy procedure. And it's my hope that I never have to do it again.
That's a test.
Yeah, but it's necessary. It's absolutely necessary.
I always said after I had one, I would never, ever have another one, but I ended up having 3 through the years. And I'm like, and every time it's like, never again, but. What are you going to do? You have to do what you got to do.
Yeah, right.
Well, what did they start you out with then? I mean, what did they treat you with when they found out?
It started me a week of the IV steroid. And that's all that we did until my follow-up appointment with the neurologist. I think it was 2 months down the road. And he, at that point, went over all of my tests, and he confirmed the HE, and he asked me how well my body responded to the steroids. And I told him that, you know, at that point that they lasted for about a week. And I was good for about a week, and then I went right back to where I was. And so from that point is where we started the IVIG.
Okay. Oh, so right away after the steroids burst.
Right.
Started IVIG. Well, that really proactive on his part. I mean, that's great, because that now is like a second line treatment. So, you know, might even be first line, actually, when I start to think about it. They've changed the protocols on all that stuff not too long ago. So what kind of symptoms were you having, Regina, at the time that led you to go to the doctor?
Oh, my gosh. There were so many of them. The biggest and most noticeable for me was the extreme fatigue. I was sleeping like 20 hours a day, and I didn't feel like it was enough. But I was struggling with headaches, memory issues, word finding, or I would put the wrong word in sometimes, muscle weakness, shortness of breath, vision problems, swallowing issues, the list just goes on and on and on and on.
Did you have balance issues at all?
I did. Matter of fact, before I even made it to the specialists, I started using one of those walkers with wheels because I was afraid to fall, because I had fallen so much in the past couple of years that I had started to do damage. I actually had to have an injection in my hip for bursitis because I had fallen so much on my hip.
So did you have issues with your gait? Did you find yourself dragging a foot?
It wasn't so much dragging as much as I couldn't lift it all the way. And sometimes my toes would trip on things. And that was on my left side.
Yeah, mine's the right, but everybody has one side. It depends on what side of the brain is affected with the inflammation and what side you have the symptoms on. So yeah, that to me, that was a sign that there was something wrong when I couldn't walk. I'm walking into walls and dragging my right foot like I had a stroke. You know, it's like,
well, that's what I was worried about, is because I had become so weak so fast. I thought, my gosh, did I have a stroke?
Yeah, you can't help but wonder that when you're in that condition and you don't know what's wrong and nobody knows what's wrong. Nobody can answer you. All kinds of things go through your mind. You know,
yes,
you have. I have to say, Hashimoto's encephalopathy wasn't one thing that went through my mind.
No, I'm like, what?
Yeah. I even said, can you spell that? Because they actually called me about the results and before I went into the neurologist. And I said, can you spell it for me? Because I right away I thought, I'm gonna Google it. And which was, to my surprise, there wasn't hardly anything on Google to read about it. You know, one article, that was it.
But, well, there still isn't much out there.
Yeah.
Yep. There still isn't much out there.
No, but at least it's changed where there's scientific articles and stuff like that on it, where there wasn't anything. So then you're really in a blind spot when they diagnose you with something that's, well, at that time it was supposed to be very rare, and you can't find any information on it.
Yeah, when I went back to my family doctor after having visited the specialist that he sent me to, he said, "What?" He said, "I've never heard of it."
My primary said to me, "Who diagnosed you with that?" Like, yeah, you're crazy. And then when I told her who it was, it's very well known, respected neurologist, she went, "Oh."
Yeah.
So at least she's heard of it. That was a good thing, you know. Did you find your symptoms getting worse while you were waiting to get diagnosed?
The longer it went on, the worse it got. It was just awful, awful.
And that whole time you're getting, sometimes you can be getting permanent brain damage from it, that things that never leave us.
And like I said, I feel like I'm one of the blessed ones, because I know that there are some people that go many years undiagnosed, and even after they have a diagnosis, like you said, you know, you're questioned, and it's crazy in this day and age that we can't be open-minded enough to understand that there are things that we have yet to discover.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely right. And that's where HESA is really trying to find someone to do research on just HE, not any of the other autoimmune encephalitises, because HE is so misunderstood, and people just aren't aware of it, nor do the doctors even know. There's so much controversy, I guess, is what I want to say, that we need some answers. So what you actually answered the next question, so I'm going to skip it. Were you given any other diagnosis before the HE diagnosis?
Oh, my goodness. I have a laundry list. Oh, let me see. I took some notes for myself, because obviously, you know, the brain.
I have a list right in front of me, so don't feel bad.
Polymyalgia, chronic fatigue, PTSD, anxiety with aggression, insomnia, sleep apnea, hypertension, hypothyroidism, bursitis of the hips and shoulders, Epstein-Barr virus, Hashimoto's, and low vitamin D. And those are the ones that I can remember. There are some obviously that I probably am missing, but those are the big ones.
That sounds pretty typical too. Did they ever bring up the fact of it possibly being psychological?
No.
Well, thank God.
But I have been struggling with this one issue, because I've had anxiety for 20 or 30 years that I've been medicated for. But I know I had anxiety when I was a kid. I just didn't know what it was. As far as somebody putting it on me as it's all in your head and it's something psychological, no, they didn't specifically say that. But the one that floored me the most was the one of anxiety with aggression. I get agitated with my anxiety when it hits, and I know that, but I am the farthest from aggression you could ever possibly imagine.
I can't even imagine anybody diagnosing you with that by knowing you the last few years. It would surprise the hell out of me.
Well, You know, and that's a minor one compared to what a lot of people go through.
Well, so many, as you know, are diagnosed with a psychological disorder, and which delays the proper diagnosis. And once they're labeled with that, it's hard for a doctor to look past it and look outside that box. So,
yes.
I mean, I feel fortunate I was never diagnosed with that. Depression, anxiety, but that comes from having a chronic disease, especially when they didn't know what it was. So,
right.
You know, I would say the majority of people, especially with encephalitis, have a form of depression and anxiety that just goes with the territory.
Well, it affects our mood, especially if we're in a situation where we're frustrated because we can't get answers. When we're in a situation where people don't hear us. When we're in a situation where medications are not working. And, you know, it raises a flag for us for fear, and you can't help but to be anxious.
Well, and plus the fact that we can't do what we normally did.
That
right. Frustration right there.
Yes.
Enough to depress you. Especially when you were an A personality, you know, and all of a sudden you're just not able
right.
to anymore.
Right.
So you went through quite a few, you didn't go through as many doctors as most do. But what were your feelings as you were going through this journey? I mean, how did it feel?
I was looking for validation. That was my primary goal. Because I knew it was not all in my head. This was a real situation. And each doctor that I went to further validated everything that I had been feeling and saying was wrong with me. And I'm grateful that I was put on the right path. Unfortunately, though, as you know, many times when we find a good doctor, they don't always stick around.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah. And so, even though I give high marks to the neurologist who diagnosed me, but he only stuck around for me to have 5 months of IVIG, and then he left.
And then to get that reapproved again by somebody else is a awful thing to go through.
Yes. But I was able to find a neurologist local. However, she's very frank about knowing nothing about HE. And I don't fault her for her lack of knowledge. However, I feel that I'm coming up short, because if she was willing to take me on as a patient, I feel that she needs to know as much as she can know about HE. And to me,
study or learn or research.
And to me, I don't see that happening.
That's a crime, because it would only do her benefit by learning the disease, so that if somebody else ever came in, right?
Right.
That she could pick up on the symptoms.
Right.
Yeah, that's upsetting to me. And it's upsetting that new interns are coming out of medical school with absolutely no knowledge of
right.
what Hashimoto's encephalopathy is, or even the broader term of autoimmune encephalitis. It's not studied the way it should be. You know, I mean, it leaves people with permanent damage when doctors don't know what's
right.
going on and they're not getting treated. So I know you're having issues right now trying to get IVIG again. What happened?
My current neurologist had done a prior authorization with my insurance, and they agreed to pay X amount of dollars. And so last May, that's May of 21, we started on IVIG. And in January, the insurance changed up and said, oh no, we've decided we're not going to pay what we originally said we were going to pay. In fact, we're not going to pay anything. And
unbelievable.
And because of that, my second insurance won't pay anything either. And so they appealed, and it came back unfavorable. They put in for 10 different days appeal, and 9 of them come back unfavorable, denied, and 1 came back approved. And we are all baffled as to why that 1 came back approved. But bless the financial division of our local hospital. They are taking it to the highest level with that 1 that had been approved, and with the documentation of my medical history, and hopes that the rest of them will be turned around. Our treatments are not cheap. Every day that we go in, we're looking at around $25,000. And for my little community hospital, bless them, I'm so grateful, they wrote off $1 million. But because of that large write-off, they had to stop my treatment. And I can't fault them for it.
No.
Because what a blessing it was for them to do that for me.
You know what? I have to say that happens more than it should. Whether somebody just codes something wrong, even if it's just one treatment and they put down the wrong reason you're getting it, which happens, it's an accident. Those insurance companies or the Medicare or whatever will just deny it, even though they know you've been getting it for how long and, you know, you were approved to begin with. It's a fight every time. And nobody believes me, Regina, when I tell them, for me, it's about $30,000 a week to get the treatments.
Right.
And I go every week. So you're talking $120,000 a month. And, you know, I couldn't get my treatments if I didn't have insurance.
Right. Right. I mean, I have insurance, but if they're not going to pay, it's like I don't have insurance.
You might as well not have insurance if they're not going to pay.
Right.
No, I mean... But what do people do when they're sick and they don't have insurance? Then where are they? I mean, I just feel so bad for people that can't afford to get what they need. But there is help if they go directly to the IVIG companies. I know they will try to help them, but it's just a mess. It's a crime is what it is. This gets kind of personal, I guess, but you know me, I get personal. Did you getting sick cause a loss of income at all for you or your family?
Again, blessed. I was on disability prior to my diagnosis. So There was no loss of income for us. One thing that we haven't discussed is how it has affected my family.
That was my next question for you.
Okay. My husband and I, we just celebrated our 34th anniversary, and we have been partners. We haven't just been married to each other. We have been partners for 34 years. And I carried a lot of the load while my husband worked, because I either did not have a job or I worked less hours. My main job was when I worked at the school. And so I had the same hours that our daughter had. And so that left a lot more time for me to manage the house and the yard and paying the bills and those sort of things. But when he retired, we put our full partnership together, and no matter what it was, we did it together. And when I got sick, I could see the frustration in my husband over the fact that he didn't understand what was going on with me and that we couldn't get answers for the longest time. He knew me as the strength of the family, held everything up, did everything all the time. And for me, all of a sudden, to not be able to do anything, and he's stuck doing the dishes and cooking, which he absolutely hates, doing the laundry, doing all the yard work. We would sit together and pay the bills because he really never had that responsibility, but he would check my math for me and make sure that when I wrote the checks that I had them written correctly. And, I felt like a kindergartner.
It feels degrading at times.
It robs you of so much
of your self-respect. Yep.
Yes. And your self-esteem. It's bad enough you're fatigued and can't get up, but when it robs your self-esteem and you don't want to get up, it's ridiculous. Blessings upon blessings. We have one child together, and she moved in with us January of 21. And her and her husband moved in, and he started cooking, and he helps us do some cleaning and stuff. And they had a baby. There are positive things that help me to keep getting up every day. There are things to help me to look forward to tomorrow instead of, oh gosh, I'm this sick today. What's tomorrow going to be? While there've been bad things, there've been good things too. But my daughter probably would not have moved in with us had I not become so sick.
Well, there are blessings in every situation. A person has to just be able to see it. And I think that's such a big deal when you have a rare disease or any kind of chronic disease, is to keep positive, even though there's days when you think, why me?
Yes.
I find, and you've heard me say this before, I find having a purpose to get up in the morning, like you have your grandchild to get up and enjoy. But to find that purpose to help you, help motivate you to get up, keep going, keep trying to get answers, is such a necessary thing to have.
It is. I have been an avid gardener for a long time. When we lived in California, I even took the classes to become a master gardener, and I was certified while I was out there. And I did not recertify here in Michigan, but you bring the knowledge with you anyway.
Absolutely.
And, And I used to say that I bleed green. but I, after all those vials of blood, I know that it's not green. But I tell you, it was horrible for me to have to sit back and do what I call executive pointing for my family to fulfill my desire to garden. They've done a wonderful job. You have
a beautiful garden.
Well, they have completely modified everything so that I can keep gardening. It's taken a lot of work, a lot of breaking backs, hauling dirt and whatnot, but they love me no matter what. And this is how they show their love for me, is by helping me to keep moving.
That's just so beautiful to have that support system like that. And you're right, it's love is what it is. You know, it's like, it's not a burden to them.
No, it's not.
You know, helping you, someone you love, that's not a burden. So, I mean, that's just beautiful.
Thank you.
What happens, Regina, if you do try to do too much? What happens?
The fatigue comes in so easily. When I get fatigued, that's when I lose my words. I forget things. The weakness comes back. I have a hard time breathing. So when I do get out, And I try to get out 2, 3, 4 times a day to do some gardening, because it's not just physically therapeutic, it's mentally therapeutic as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Yep.
But I know when I reach my limit, not to push beyond it. And it's taken me a long time to learn that. But I give it up, and I have to go in the house and I lay down, and a lot of times I'll fall asleep. But once I sleep and get rested, I feel like I can go again. But it's never more than 45 minute spurts.
I get that, because I do things in small bursts, and then I sit for a bit, and then I get back up, do a little bit more, then sit. It's a learning process. It took me a while to learn that trick. Not to just keep push, because I'd pay for it.
Yes.
And when I'm like you, if I do too much, I have the word finding is bad. The balance issues get bad. My sleep gets bad. I'm exhausted beyond anything I can describe. So I get what you're saying. I'll slur my words. It's hard to explain that to somebody who doesn't have it.
I mean, there's times when my thinking capacity, it's like the door just closes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I understand that totally. I do. Well, Regina, if you had something that you wanted to say to somebody or to the world that are newly diagnosed with an AE, or they're looking for a diagnosis, what would you say to them?
Don't ever give up.
I agree.
You don't ever give up, because if you quit today, you don't know if the answer is there tomorrow.
I agree. And,
I mean, no, it gets frustrating when you've been sick for so long. It gets frustrating when doctors don't listen to you. It gets frustrating when you have to go to a million doctor appointments. But you're worth it. You are absolutely worth every bit of effort you put into yourself.
That is so perfect to tell somebody that, because I think so many people do get so disgusted, and they just want to give up. They're tired.
Yes.
But,
yes.
You know, they are worth it. And it's an effort. It's work. It's definitely work. to keep going and trying to find out what's wrong or to get the treatments or whatever, but you have to do it.
Yes.
Just have absolutely to do it. Well, I want to thank you so much for sitting down and talking with me today. And I find that these series that we've been doing really help people. They can listen to somebody else who've gone through the journey. They maybe they're still going through the journey, which most of us are that have HE, but you learn you're not alone when you listen to somebody else talking. And I find it works so well to be able to listen to someone else talk about it. When I got diagnosed, there wasn't anybody. One other person I found that had HE, that was it for many years. And we sure bent each other's ears a lot. But at least now there's more people getting diagnosed and there's more people out there. And I know your interview here is going to help many. And I really thank you.
Well, I appreciate you building up HESA and making it available to all of us who need it. Because, man, I'll tell you, when I first heard that word, first thing I did was I got on Facebook and I put in encephalopathy, and that's what came up. And, man, there I have learned so much from the support group.
Oh, that's so good. You're so good to everybody on there. You are just so excellent that I don't know what we would do without you.
Oh, you know, it's, you just gotta love people because that's what they need.
And they need somebody to listen.
Yeah, they do.
And it's a good place to do it where, because I think myself included in this, that sometimes I just don't tell anybody how I feel. That's family members or my friends that don't have a chronic illness, because I feel like I'm complaining, where I can go into the group setting and say how I feel and people are going to understand.
Right.
You know, and right. I think that's a big part of it. You have that camaraderie, or however you say it, between each other in those groups. And you know they'll always sit and listen to you.
They do. They do.
No judgment.
None here.
Yeah.
When I can walk on water, then I'll start judging.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a deal. I don't think I'll ever walk on water.
Oh, no, me either.
I'm far from it. I'm lucky if I can walk on the ground.
Well, thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Regina. You have a good one.
You too. Bye.
For more information on Hashimoto's encephalopathy, autoimmune encephalitis, or HESA, visit our website at www.hesaonline.info.